Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Football, volleyball, swimming, cross country. The school year in Iowa has begun, and so have the fall sports at high schools, junior highs, and middle schools all over the state. Those sports generate a lot of opportunities, excitement, and fun. But there are also some ugly challenges that have arisen in our youth sports culture. Later this hour, I'll talk with Dan Gould, director of the Institute for the Study of Youth Sports at Michigan State University, about many of those challenges. But we're going to start in the stands. Last week, the Iowa High School Athletic Association released a statement asking parents and adult fans to, quote, act your age. In the statement, the Iowa High School Athletic Association cited a recent national survey of more than 2,000 high school athletic directors. More than 62% of them said that their least favorite part of their job was dealing with aggressive parents and adult fans. And that has consequences for schools, for athletes, for coaches, and officials. Tom Keating is on the line with me now. He is executive director of the Iowa High School Athletic Association. Hello, Tom.
Well, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you for being here. And tell me what prompted you to release this statement last week.
Well, you know, the National Federation of High Schools and its executive director, Carissa Niehoff, asked us to partner with them to kind of hit something that we've been dancing around for a long time. And we just felt like it was time to hit it head on, especially heading into a new school year and you know, trying to find a way to get people's attention a little bit and get the public talking about an issue that I think we all know exists. And I think we've accomplished that. There are people talking about it.
Well, tell me a little bit about how the problem looks from your vantage point, because, you know, we do get things that blow up and we see it on the news. Oh, you know, this fan was out of control at a Little League game or something like that. The stories that kind of go viral. But on a more day-to-day basis, week-to-week basis, how do you see the problem in Iowa?
Well, you know, our first responsibility is to the kids and the young people in our schools, and we want them to have a positive experience. Yeah, obviously, we want them to have an enjoyable experience. And, you know, quite honestly, when fan behavior and pressure from parents, et cetera, impose on that fun, that's problematic for us. I don't know if people understand it or not, but they put stress on kids. Kids hear their parents in stands, and kids know when parents go talk to the coach, and that creates a stress that, quite honestly, they don't deserve. You know, kids report to us that the reason they play sports, the reason they're involved in these activities, is to have fun. Now, that's the number one. Yeah, they're competitive and they like to win and they like to, you know, improve their skills and all that goes along with that. But, you know, fun is at the heart of it. And, you know, the unruly fan, the unruly parent can truly impact that in a negative way. The other is, you know, as you saw in the article that we sent out, that the number of officials is declining dramatically, and quite honestly, it's threatening the future of youth and high school sports.
We're going to talk more about the need for new officials and officials who are leaving the games in just a few minutes. But I want to talk more about some of the things that you shared in this statement. I mentioned the act your age, but you also said don't live vicariously through your children. What's your message for parents?
Well, you know, I think that first piece in act your age is it's somebody needs to be the adult, and we are the adults. Kids need leadership. They need role models. They need folks to guide them through those tough things in life, including when things don't go your way. And we need to set the example for them. And if we lose our composure when things don't go the way we would like them to go, how in the world can we expect kids to maintain their composure? So I think that's number one. And the part about living vicariously is, quite honestly, you know, we had our chance. We had our time. We had our experience. It's time to let the kids have their experience, whether that's a son or daughter, or whether it's a neighbor, or whether it's a classmate of our son or daughter. But it's important that we let them have the experience solely and not interfere with that experience to taint it in any way.
One of the things you point out in the release is that according to the NCAA, only about 2% of all high school athletes are awarded a sports scholarship. And a lot of people are hoping that their kids will get sports scholarships. A lot of people are pushing for their kids to get sports scholarships. Is your message that high school sports are just about high school sports?
I think it is. And, you know, it's for us to say that high school sports should be for everybody, that launching pad to move into a college scholarship would be like saying every, you know, math class, it should be a launching pad for every student to get some sort of an academic scholarship with them to do that. But we know there's a lot of hard work that goes into that. We know that there's outside work that students need to do. And we want them to understand that the lessons that you can get, the benefits. I think, you know, to me, all those benefits we talk about, leadership, overcoming adversity, learning commitment, learning to be motivated, learning to become part of a team, all of those things kind of get pushed to the side when we just zero in on that financial piece and say, well, my son or daughter could get a scholarship if we do this. I think, you know, the statistics show the likelihood of that is not great. But what we can say is those lessons, if we let them be learned through that sports experience, can last a lifetime.
You end your statement with another message for parents. So you talk about not coaching from the sidelines, but also not critiquing your child's performance on the car ride home. What do you think parents need to know about how they should be interacting with their student athlete?
Well, I think the important thing is to separate, our parenting from their experience, you know, and their success or failure in or disappointment in an outcome of an event. We need to let them, kids need constants in their lives. They need something consistent. And if they can count on us for their support, for their love, and for, you know, a parent-child relationship, that goes a long way. When we cross the line and say, I'm your parent, but I'm also your critic in something that you are involved in, if it's not hurting you, or it's not, you know, it's not leading you down a path we don't think you should go, I'm not sure we should be critiquing that. And when we do, then, you know, the student isn't quite sure that we really truly love them unconditionally. They tie that relationship and that love to their performance, and that adds more stress to their situation. And, you know, as I've said before, I've heard it more than once, but the only question you should ask your child when you get in the car after an event is, you know, where do you want to go get ice cream? It shouldn't be anything about the event. You know, if the kid wants to talk about it, they'll bring it up. And then it's a good time to listen and let them talk through it.
Well, Tom, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Hey, this has been a pleasure, and thank you. And let's not forget that, like a lot of things, the vast, vast majority of parents and fans in the stands are just fabulous people. And they're doing the right thing. And what I'd like to see is for all of us, not just me with an editorial or, suggestions, but all of us encourage parents and those in the stands to be as positive as possible. So thanks for giving me that opportunity.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. Tom Keating, Executive Director of the Iowa High School Athletic Association. And as Tom mentioned, we are experiencing a very real referee shortage in Iowa, and fan behavior is a big factor in that. Again, according to the IHSAA, 60% of new officials registered in Iowa in 2016-2017 did not come back the next year. Kent Sesker is a longtime Iowa high school referee. He started reffing in 1993, and he currently refs football, wrestling, baseball, and softball, and he is with me now. Hello, Kent.
Hello, Charity. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being here, and give us your view from the sidelines, from the courts. Tell me how you've seen things change over your career.
Well, to reiterate a lot of what Tom had said, it's all about, you know, who's what your role is in these situations. As a official, basically, we're just out there to call a good contest. We don't care who wins or loses. We're just focused in on trying to do the right thing, making the right calls, making it a positive experience for the athletes, for the coaches, administrators, whoever else may be involved in that particular contest. So, you know, as Tom had mentioned, you know, kids participate in sports because it's fun. It's something that they enjoy doing something with their friends, being competitive, chasing goals. Those things are wonderful. Coaches, you know, if a coach is just looking for wins, then they're not doing a very good job. You know, it's all about teaching their kids teamwork, discipline, hard work, overcoming adversity, all those difficult things. And the majority of the coaches out there do a fabulous job. You know, they're either volunteers or they're not paid very well, depending on the level of high school or club or whatever the case may be. And they play a very important role. And 90-95% of the time, it's a very positive experience, and people are doing all the right things. As far as the fans, same holds true there. Unfortunately, the ones that we hear about, you know, overshadow all the good things that people do. So, you know, it's all about knowing your role and supporting these kids and making sports as positive experience as possible.
So give me some of your wisdom from what you've experienced out there. Have you had adult fans yelling at you, threatening you?
I've certainly had them yell at me. That's nothing new. That just basically comes with the territory. The way I look at it is...
Has it always come with the territory, or is it more common now?
I think it's always come with the territory. I think sometimes the parents are a little more overbearing now. At times, depending upon the sport, depending upon the situation. But, you know, it's one of those things as an official. One, you have to have thick skin and not let things like that bother you. There's a fine line as to, you know, if they disagree with the call, fine, disagree with the call. You know, we're human as officials. We're not going to get every call right. We're going to strive to get every call right. But if I was to sit in the studio and observe you, Charity, every time you made an error or something that I didn't agree on and I made those comments to you, you probably wouldn't like that.
Not very much, no.
So those are the type of things you have to keep in mind.
All right, we have to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. My guest right now is a longtime Iowa high school referee. Kent Sesker will continue our conversation in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about youth sports culture, how it's changed, some of the main challenges we face in youth athletics today. We'll also talk about what schools, parents, and fans can do to make things better. With me right now is Kent Sesker. He is a longtime Iowa high school referee. He started reffing in 1993 and refs football, wrestling, baseball, and softball. And we're talking about this very real referee shortage in Iowa and the idea that fan behavior, fan abuse is maybe a big factor in that. And Kent, I mean, you were talking about, okay, fans are going to yell at you from the stands. You said you have to kind of develop a thick skin. But let's go back to that statistic that I shared earlier. According to the IHSAA, 60% of new officials registered in Iowa in 2016-2017 didn't come back again the next year. Why do you think so few of them returned?
Well, I think it's a few different factors. I think a lot of those officials that decided not to continue with it are younger folks, generally in their 20s, that you know, maybe not have as thick a skin as some of us older folks do. So it's a little bit of an adjustment to being able to do something you want to get out and enjoy. The thing about being an official is nobody cares that you're new. You know, they expect you to get it right every time, regardless of your experience level.
Not a lot of understanding for officials, right?
An official once said, it's the only job that you'll ever have or that you're expected to be perfect on day one, and they get better as you go. So it can be difficult for young folks, especially ones that, you know, might be a little sensitive. Plus, you know, most officials do it as a part-time hobby, something they enjoy, a way to stay involved with the sport. But kids these days have a lot more options as far as doing different things that they can make additional monies at. And, you know, if they're not enjoying it as much as they thought they would, or they're taking more abuse than they thought that they should verbally, then a lot of times they'll get out. So it's a tough situation. We're working hard, people all over the state and the country, of bringing in new people and getting them involved with officiating, mentoring them and moving them along. Generally, once someone sticks around for about 3 years or so, then they'll usually officiate for quite a while. But the toughest part is getting through those first few years and really learning a joy for it, and something that you enjoy. And if you can do that, then the progress is good. But those first few years are pretty challenging.
I was reading about another referee, and this was from an article from the Des Moines Register a little over a year ago, a referee named Dave Souther, who said he began officiating in Central Iowa in 2000, but he quit in 2006 because he got fed up with the awful treatment. He ended up coming back a few years later, but he said there was one varsity game. The fans hated one of his calls. They were letting him hear about it. He turned to the athletic director from the home school to see what he was doing to try to control the crowd. And he was screaming just as loud as the fans. And he looks over at the sheriff thinking, you know, am I going to have to ask the sheriff to help me out here? And the sheriff was yelling also. And so he just felt really alone, really vulnerable, at risk. So obviously this is an extreme situation. And it's more than needing a thick skin in a situation like that. That sounds dangerous.
That sounds like anarchy to me.
Yeah.
At some point, somebody's got to take control of the situation. I mean, the athletic director, they have to put their feelings aside. Their responsibility is administrating the contest just like anything else. They're the go-to person as far as the officials. Now, if you have law enforcement that's against you also, it might be tough to get your police escort out of town that you're looking for. Not really funny, but, you know, I understand, you know, and unfortunately, you know, we see these situations go viral where parents are upset about a 13-year-old kid's strike zone umpiring a baseball game of 7-year-old kids that are playing. You know, it's one thing that I use in baseball and softball when I think youth coaches are getting out of line is I'll say, what kind of example are you setting for your 13-year-old kids right now? And that's usually pretty effective because they'll usually understand, okay, I'm acting like an idiot and my kids deserve better. You know, right or wrong, if you disagree with the call, that's fine. But no need to make a scene. Just disagree with the call. We're going to move on. You know,
And I know you're pretty proud of the fact that you've never actually thrown a coach out of a game.
I very much am proud of that fact. Over 26 years in a lot of sports, and I had a lot of opportunities to do it where I probably could have or should have, but I'm a firm believer in diffusing the situation. I understand sports, that there's a lot of passion and enthusiasm and spirit involved, and a lot of times, you know, that can get a little bit carried away just because people, you know, they put a lot of time and effort and energy into coaching their kids, and they want to be successful. So you have to understand the emotion of the contest. And a lot of times when I'll have situations like that, the coaches will come over and apologize afterward and say, hey, you know, I get excited and say, and I'm totally cool with that. So it's all about being able to respond to the situation. And as an official, you just can't take things personally.
So I want to bring our next guest into the conversation here in a moment. But before we do that, I have to ask you, why do you love this? Because you do love to do this, and it's kept you going for more than 25 years. What is it about it that you love?
Well, I grew up a sports guy. My dad was a teacher and a coach. So as little as I was, I could always remember going to the football field or the baseball field or wherever it might be as far as him coaching and having a love for sports. I have three brothers, two older, one younger, and, you know, grew up playing sports every day. And, you know, when I was in my early 20s, I wanted to get into coaching, but I never really had the time to do it. And then just on a whim, talking to someone, I got into officiating and discovered that, you know, this is a great way to stay involved with athletics. I love being outside working with the kids. And I tell people, you know, whether it's a wrestling match or whether it's a football game or a softball game, if it's a great game, if it's great competition, the high is almost as good as competing, and it's just a lot of fun. is the way I look at it. And just try and make a positive experience for the kids each and every time out. And win or lose, you know, if people felt you did a good job, it makes you feel good coming off the field or the mat or whatever the case may be. And if I can be one person that can help make each experience positive, not only for the athletes, but the coaches and the fans, then I feel pretty good about what happened.
Kent Sesker, longtime Iowa High School referee. Stick around, but I want to bring our next guest into the conversation, Dan Gould. He knows as much or more about youth sports culture than anybody else in the United States. He's the director of the Institute for the Study of Youth Sports and a professor of kinesiology at Michigan State University, and he's with us now. Hello, Dan.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today. And I do want to continue our conversation for a little while about fan behavior. From your perspective, how have you seen things evolve and change in recent years?
Well, I think in youth sport in general, a lot of us have written and observed that it's become much more professionalized. Like high school sports are in the educational system because the student athletes are not only supposed to have fun, but develop, be educated on things they can't get in the classroom. And as pro sports have gotten more popular, the media, you know, there's 24/7 cable, people have seen that professional model. And the professional model is like you win, you're kept, you lose, you're gone. And that sort of drifted down to the youth sport. And like when Tom was talking, you were talking about scholarships, and people are playing sports a lot thinking they're going to get some outcome versus an experience that's going to help the child grow. And I think that kind of drifts into all aspects of sports, whether it's coaches, the kids, the fans, or the officials.
And you feel like we're watching sports on television, we're watching fan behavior at these professional sports, and we're bringing that with us to the high school game or the junior high game or the little league game?
Yeah, and I think we're products of our own culture. And our culture in general, we may not agree with it, but a lot of the social media-driven culture, if I have a lot of followers on YouTube or another social media, a lot of times some of these young kids that have a million followers, the more outrageous thing they do, the more they get followed. You know, and people see this, and it sort of becomes acceptable behavior, even at the political level today, kind of the way politicians talk. I think, you know, we're all a product of that. And Tom was mentioning before about parents living vicariously through their kids. I think that's still true. But there was a sports sociologist, Jay Coakley, who had an interesting perspective. He says parents in general today, your worth as a parent is kind of subtly defined by your kid's achievement. So if your kid goes to Harvard, everybody wants to know what you did to get them there. If they go to jail, they want you to put them in the cell next to them. And parents sort of, sports, there's a scoreboard and that success. If my kid gets a scholarship, I must be a better parent. So I don't think it's just vicarious anymore. I think it's parents get this message that my worth as a parent is defined by my child's success, which kind of adds to the intensity.
All right, so that's a lot of pressure on kids. Let's talk about some of the other dangers of amping this up as we have. I mean, we know we're lacking in referees, for one thing, but what are some of, from your perspective, some of the real risks that we're facing?
Well, I think one is the stress that's placed on kids that you've already talked about. I think, to me, one of the beauties of sport, I mean, kids do it because it's fun, obviously, but we're hoping, and I think there's evidence to show if sports are done right, kids learn lessons through sport involvement in the educational setting that they can't necessarily learn in class, like teamwork. They might learn how to lead. They learn how to deal with adversity because you're going to fail. You're going to get a bad call once in a while. You're also going to get a good call, which people forget about. But kids can learn a lot of lessons. And if this professionalized model takes over, people tend to forget about those lessons, and it all becomes about the won or lost or the outcome. And I think, as you and Tom were talking about before, I think it's also it's not just the 2% of kids that go on to play in college and some with college scholarships. It's about the 95% of kids that play their last game in high school. Did they fall in love with the sport and physical activity? Do they want to stay physically active? Did they learn some lessons about working with diverse people? And if sport's done right, that can happen. The professionalization, I think, can kind of clamp down on that and prevent it from happening as often.
Let's talk a little bit more about not just the professionalization of sports, but this business of youth sports. We have seen a huge growth in club sports. So these are the sports that are taking part are taking place outside of school. We see kids joining youth clubs, not rec sports, although those still happen, but joining these clubs in sometimes early elementary school. And some of these clubs play throughout the year. There are multiple seasons for baseball. You know, kids are playing fall ball right now. So what is your perspective on how common these clubs have become for kids?
Travel teams and clubs have certainly grown in the last decade and maybe a little beyond that. And youth sports have become a big business. Time magazine had an article a couple years ago. It's a $15 billion business. That's not all bad. We're, you know, this is America. We're a capitalist society. And, you know, if I'm paying for a coach, I can probably expect more from that coach in terms of their education and other type of things. But it also brings some negatives. There's been a few studies in the last few years that have shown the more parents pay for their kid to play sport, the more likely the child perceives pressure to live up to all the money that's being spent. Travel teams, we also know, cater to the best kids. And many of the kids who need sport the most that maybe aren't less physically active or less skilled sort of get ruled out of that. There's some recent studies I know from Wisconsin have shown that high school athletes who specialize in one sport and train year-round are more likely to get injured than ones who play multiple sports. So there's a lot of possible outcomes, and many of them are not good.
Right. And I want to, before we have to let Kent go, I want to talk about that idea of access. And it's something that I've observed, a lot of people observe. When I go to high school athletic games, it often occurs to me, this team does not reflect the diversity of the school. And Kent, you've seen a change over time where it does seem like a lot of kids who don't have access to those club sports are not getting access to their high school athletics either, right?
Yes, I would agree. And it's something that is certainly challenging, and it's not good when we're looking at it as a haves and have-nots. And if it's a financial situation, that's difficult. And it's really on the responsibility of, generally the schools, because you want to, recruit students to participate in sports. And, when there's a will, there's a way, if a kid wants to participate in sports and doesn't have money for cleats or a uniform or whatever, that's something that the booster club or whoever should step up and get this kid involved. And whether
with tryouts, if somebody's got 3 years of experience already under their belt or more, and they're trying out against a kid who has never really played in an organized way before, I mean, that's a huge problem.
Yeah, that can be difficult. Sometimes you just have to recognize your skill level. And, if they're playing junior high sports, that's great. It's within the school system. Or if they're more geared toward they should start out through a recreational league, that's a good thing. At the high school level, it's really a responsibility of the coaches and the community and the teachers to encourage these kids to take advantage of extracurricular activities, sports, theater, whatever the case may be, because everybody knows the studies that the more you're involved in extracurricular activities, the more well-rounded you are, the less likely you are to be in trouble.
Well, Kent, I appreciate your time today. Kent Sesker, longtime Iowa high school referee, started reffing back in 1993. Kent, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
And Dan, we have about a minute left before a break here, and we'll talk more about access after the break as well. But can you respond to what you were hearing Kent say there? I mean, we see these club sports feeding our Iowa high school athletics, and we see fewer kids getting in there, don't we?
Yeah, I think it's a national concern. There's a big group now, Project Play, funded by the Aspen Institute, that's trying to change the culture and have more community-based sport, get more facilities built in places where kids have less access, because it does set up, if I can afford private coaches, strength coaches, nutritionists to work with my child, and a poor parent can't, then my kid has an advantage given abilities similar. So people are trying to figure out ways we could level the playing field more.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. My guest is Dan Gould. He is the director of the Institute for the Study of Youth Sports and a professor of kinesiology at Michigan State University. You can join the conversation as well with your questions, your concerns about our youth sports culture. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about youth sports culture, how it's changed, and some of the big challenges we face in youth athletics today. And we're also going to talk about what schools, parents, and fans can do to make things better. You are welcome to join the conversation, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Dan Gould. He is the director of the Institute for the Study of Youth Sports and professor of kinesiology at Michigan State University. And Dan, just before the break, we were talking about this problem of access in our public schools. All kids are supposed to have the opportunity to participate in sports. And we have seen that shift over time. You were talking about, you know, communities doing more to build up their recreation programs, rec centers, et cetera, giving kids more of an opportunity to participate in low-cost athletics. But it just feels like this gulf is growing everywhere. And schools are faced with a big challenge of making these opportunities for kids when they may not have the coaching staff to welcome all comers.
Yeah, great point. There's a lot of barriers out there. At the same time, you know, I think it, kind of throwing our hands up and saying we can't do anything about it. I know our state high school association here in Michigan has had a task force for the last 2 years focused on multi-sport participation and coming up with things like an athlete who plays multi-sports gets a special kind of letter versus one that specializes in one sport to try to change the culture, or getting education to parents early. For example, if your son or daughter falls in love with basketball, hopefully they could make the varsity team, but you know, only 15 kids make the varsity team, 40 or 50 try out. If they also played soccer or cross country or swimming or wrestling, some of the sports that they tried and they don't necessarily cut, then if they didn't make basketball, they have some other options. So I think there's some things we can think about as parents. I mean, more of a radical one is, why do we only have one high school basketball team? You know, should we think about multiple teams in popular sports? And a lot of us should lobby our politicians simply for the fact that there's some data to show that kids who play high school sports are more likely to be active later on in life. And given the physical activity in or inactivity crisis and the health costs associated with that, some investment now may pay off very well down the road for all of us in terms of our health care costs.
Interesting. And of course, we've seen a lot of our schools in Iowa, our schools get consolidated, and in our larger communities, the high schools get bigger and bigger and bigger. So, of course, the bigger the high school is, the fewer opportunities there really are for the students, because there are so many students, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's an issue that, you know, kind of a practicality that sort of, if I'm a parent, I may want to hedge my bet a little. You know, sports like cross country, swimming, wrestling don't necessarily cut kids. So if your child does that and perhaps another kind of sport where, you know, that they, the problem is not every kid is going to fall in love with all the different sports. So they have to find out what they love. But if they're focused on one and that's the only game in town and they don't make it, they have a lot less options. Hopefully we have some recreation programs for high school kids, et cetera. But you don't see
those much. That's interesting because we do see the rec programs basically end at sixth grade in so many ways.
Yeah, I think that's a valid point.
So I'm hearing you say parents should encourage their students to play a lot of different sports as opposed to specialization. And we do see the research to back that up, that that doesn't mean that your child is going to be worse at the sport that they really love. In fact, it could make them a better athlete in that sport, not playing it year round. So there's a role for parents. You mentioned government, talking to politicians. What role do you think state government has in this?
Well, state and federal, we're one of the few countries in the world that doesn't have a ministry of sport that designates money for sport programming. Norway has it, Canada has it, the UK has it. So ours really has to be at the local community. And the idea of, you know, and it's hard with the tax bases shrinking, et cetera, and especially here in the Midwest, for us to, you know, funding's tough. But I think for us to be able to make really good cases, and I think we can make it about, especially on the physical activity or the negative effects of inactivity on health costs. I mean, it's just like a doctor would tell us, prevention now is a lot cheaper than surgery later. And if we can get more kids active in sport and, you know, and maybe ask questions like, I think everybody, it's not just the parents, it's not just the coaches, it's all of us in the community. There was one coach I heard about down in North Carolina who actually, sad story, died. He was a summer swim coach. And the day before he died, he was in the hospital and somebody sent out a social media post and like 200 kids showed up. And it later came out this coach's only goal was to have kids fall in love with swimming. And if we get coaches that were thinking that way, how do you know, in communities, how do we get opportunities for all kids? And I think the government has to play a role. And as taxpayers, you know, we need to lobby our government some about we expect some money to be put in for parks, for, you know, recreational leagues, et cetera, if we're going to kind of help solve this problem.
You know, talking about that coach, again, research has backed up that coaches who lead with respect and even lead with love often get better results than some of these coaches who we see being, frankly, abusive, the yelling, the throwing chairs, things like that. And yet that kind of coaching culture persists. And it's something that we see coaches of younger athletes modeling on maybe some of the coaches they've seen coaching in college sports or in professional sports. How do you think coaching culture is evolving?
Well, I think you're right that a young coach sees sort of the professional model, and you see some coaches that are very aggressive, assertive, and they might model that. And that's why it's so essential to do coaching education, even rudimentary education, if you volunteer coach here, you know, but, and obviously some of the horror stories with Larry Nassar. How do we keep kids safe? Because coaches, if you're a sexual predator, sport is a good avenue for you. I hate to say that, but you're alone with kids, you touch kids when you're coaching them. And how do we make sure kids are protected? Well, a lot of that deals with education. But it's not just education for the extreme terrible things that happen, because that obviously is terrible, but just how to work with kids, how to communicate with kids. And a little education can really help us. And dealing with the shortage, I think we need to look at programs to recruit kids. Maybe we look for kids in high school. I know I got involved in coaching in high school, and same would be refereeing, and set up some programs so you could your high school varsity athletes do some little league baseball or basketball officiating. Maybe they make a little money, but you give them a little training on how to have a thick skin so they don't quit after a year. Yeah, a lot of them won't stick it out, but a few will, and then you help deal with the official shortage or the coaching shortage, et cetera.
How do you feel about how we approach these games and these rivalries. I mean, we've always had sports rivalries. It's a source of a lot of entertainment, a lot of fun for a lot of people, but it can also get really angry and really heated. How do you think we need to approach those rivalries with our kids?
Yeah, I think some groups like the Positive Coaching Alliance and others have done a good job about what kind of culture are we creating for our local sports program. If if we think being a good sports person or sportsmanship, as traditionally labeled, is important, do we tell people what that is? Do we have expectations in our program when they come to the game? Do we announce prior to the game and mid in the game this is important? Do we hold our coaches accountable? If I'm the athletic director, coaches, they're not allowed to, disrespect the referee, et cetera. And we talk to the students. I think, a student athlete, I played a lot of sports. I was a college wrestler. I know combative, intense sports, but I think you should shake your opponent's hand. You should sort of honor your opponent, honor the game, honor the official. And the culture is kind of taking us away from that. So I think we need to more directly talk about it, deal with it, enforce it in our programs.
We've got a couple of callers who want to be a part of this conversation. Laura's on the line in Waukee. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Charity.
Hi. Briefly, what do you want to share?
Well, I just wanted to call in talk about a program that's going on in the Waukee School District. My husband and I founded a nonprofit organization out here to address access, not just to sports, but to all extracurricular activities. So Waukee is one of the fastest growing school districts in the state. We're getting ready to open a second high school. And the expanse between the kind of the haves and the have-not families out here is growing. And so we founded this nonprofit organization 3 years ago that provides financial assistance for families so that their kids, preschool through high school, can experience the activities that they want to participate in. So we provide financial assistance to cover the fees, registration costs, things of that nature. But then we also provide all the equipment that the student needs in order to participate in their activity of choice. And it can be anything. It's sports, arts, academic, and social activities. But what we found is it gives the younger kids an opportunity to try out a lot of different activities. It kind of gives the parents some exposure to activities they didn't even know existed, opportunities they didn't know existed. They don't know how to find the opportunities often. We help a lot of refugee families that are new to the country and have no idea what this culture is even about. And, the hope is that with some of the younger kids, that by the time they reach to the middle school and high school sports, they can actually compete with the kids who have been playing since they were 3 or 4 years old because their parents had the financial resources to do that and to be able to kind of put them on a level playing field so that they can get onto varsity sports or out here. It's not just varsity sports, but, show choir,
right,
the dance team, things of that nature all require tryouts.
Well, Laura, it sounds like you are doing incredible work. Is it frustrating to you that you had to found an outside nonprofit? Was this something that you took to the schools first?
We didn't. We actually we founded it in honor of our son who passed away. But we recognize the need because my husband coaches youth sports, and we have older kids that were in sports when our son as an infant passed away, and recognize that need. And so we kind of just jumped in and took the bull by the horns, both as an opportunity to give these kids the chance to participate, but, also as an opportunity for us to kind of pass on that childhood.
Yeah.
That our son doesn't get to have.
Oh, Laura, I'm so sorry for your loss, but thank you so much for the work you're doing. And Dan, every community would really benefit from having someone like Laura and her husband who's willing to make a difference. I'm going to ask you the question that I asked her, though. I mean, is it frustrating that this has to come from outside the schools?
It's frustrating, but somebody once called me an idealistic realist. we're not in the, if we go back many years, we're not in the 70s or 80s when maybe there was more money for schools. money's tight, and if we have to do it through the nonprofit, to me, it's sort of a multivariate problem that we need to approach a lot of different ways. We need to get the government more involved if we can. We need the nonprofit world, like Laura, what Laura's doing is tremendous, to step up. We need the schools to think about, how can I create a different culture? One of our goals should be every kid that leaves, that played high school sport, should hopefully feel a commitment to give something back and volunteer when they're an adult because somebody volunteered when they were a kid. And then, you know, hold people, educate people, hold people accountable if they exhibit bad behavior, for example, coaches or parents. So I think it's a problem that we need to look at in a holistic manner.
All right. We have just about 3 minutes left. The kids who are coming up today, we call them Generation Z. And of course, every generation that comes up, people like to criticize the newest generation. And people have said some pretty derogatory things about this generation being, sedentary and not willing to lose, not able to lose, not able to deal with adversity. As you look at the kids who are coming up, is there anything you think we need to know about these kids participating in sports and how to support them?
Well, first, as you said, it's not all bad news. They're more accepting of adversity. This generation of kids, the studies we've done, that we know they want to be successful. They're good visual learners. They're good at finding stuff on the internet. But that comes also with some, if they're the strength, with some possible weaknesses. One would be their attention span is shorter. So we know from studying coaches have to be better at giving sort of quicker drills, talk less, get the kids involved. We know this generation of kids in many ways have been overprotected by their parents, because parents are concerned about safety and other type of things. And often parents aren't letting kids fail enough, and they step in. And yet failure in sport is a really good teacher. So when they get in later in life, if they haven't learned how to deal with some adversity, that can create problems for them. And in fact, a lot of good coaches will purposely put kids under adversity. I don't mean yell at them or in a mean way, but, you know, where they'll experience some failure and let them work through it with some guidance. I think sport has a lot of potential to help kids learn from their mistakes.
All right. Your last words for you've got an audience here of parents and grandparents, people who are going to be in the stands cheering for those kids. What do you feel it's most important for parents to know?
In the end of the day, you're trying to produce a better kid. You want your child or the child you know to have fun, but you also want them to learn some life lessons. I think one of your earlier guests talked about you're a model for your child. If you're going off the rails, going crazy, your child's probably going to model that down the road when they're frustrated with you. So how do you want your child to behave? What lessons are you trying to learn? How do we make it fun? Most of the kids are going to play their last game in high school. How can we make it a great educational experience?
Dan Gould, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Dan Gould is the director of the Institute for the Study of Youth Sports and a professor of kinesiology at Michigan State University. This hour, we've been talking about youth sports culture and some of the things that every single one of us can do to make it more positive. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Rick Brewer, Shirley Wong, Caitlin Harrop, and Dennis Reese. I'm Charity Neppe. This is Talk of Iowa.